Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, everybody. This is Renee. Welcome back to Renee's Heart to Heart. This whole week, we are going to do 5 hours worth of talk about relationships. Big category. Once I started thinking about it and breaking it down into all the different kinds of relationships we have, I realized that it's a big part of the circle of life. Probably the most important part. Very sadly, though, it's like we're always waiting. We're always thinking and waiting that someone else is going to make us happy, make us happier, make us richer, make us poorer, make us more successful, make us something else, something that we don't seem to be able to achieve on our own. But of course, in reality, we all know that's not true. People can lend us a hand, help us get a step up on occasion, but really, that's all up to us. So when I started thinking about this weekend, because of various things that are going on in my own personal life, I wrote something. It's on my Facebook page for those of you who would like to read it. But I'm going to read it this morning, and then we're going to talk about it. Relationships. Who do we have relationships with? People. Family, friends, spouses, associates, and pets. All of these animate objects. We also have relationships with things. Hobbies, jobs, vehicles, homes, belongings. Too large a category to name all of. And, of course, money. That's a biggie. Let's talk today about people, from the very close to the not close at all. Spouses. Marriage is a huge commitment, not to be taken lightly. It requires work and a lot of power sharing. I watched a movie this weekend with two great actors, Meryl Streep and Tommy Lee Jones, called Hope Springs. It's about a couple who has been married for more than 30 years and still appears to be happy. They, however, have lost love. They definitely still care deeply for each other, but life has become a boring habit. This happens in all aspects of our relationships. Of course, it has the most dangerous ramifications in marriages. This is when couples stray, hurt each other with words and actions, and often separate. This can also lose friendships that have helped you be who you are today. Different circumstances, but often the same results. Loss of loyalty and respect, you drift apart, and many times never find your way back. I believe, as in most of life's trials, you must be aware of what's happening. Don't stick your head in the sand. Relationships make the world, yours and mine, go round. In the movie, even though they don't really know how, they seek professional help for their marriage. In the beginning, it's extremely difficult for both of them. The shrink has them talk about how they fell in love, when they first made love, lots of very personal information. They both were embarrassed and awkward talking in front of each other. Funny how true feelings out there can make you feel like you're sitting in Grand Central Station naked, even when the person you're talking with was there, kind of been there, done that situation. They suffer a lot and get very hurt by each other's different renditions of their memories, but their love prevails and it's a happy ending. Happy, healthy and happy connections are so important. A friend that lives miles away, and when you hear from them, it's like there has been no missing time. You can take up where you left off. This is a true friendship. We need to cherish them and nurture them like a prize orchid or a rose. Let's get back to marriage, though. It's your most important job. It's the foundation for you and your spouse and your children and your pets and your home and your stuff. When the integrity is gone, so is the foundation. The walls come tumbling down. Scary to think that little old you has that much power, isn't it? Well, you do. We do. Outside your home is the relationship arena with others, another big responsibility, but incredibly rewarding and empowering. However, it's also something you must work at every day. I'm aware that we often feel that maybe we are the only ones trying. And maybe some days that is truer than true. However, some days it's not. Some days in our various relationships, we are the ones that are being carried. My point is this. It's our responsibility in this enormous assembly line of life. If your relationships are not true, it could be you. If you're the only one who chronically complains and points your finger at everyone else, perhaps you should consult the mirror mirror on the wall. Find out if you are anywhere close to the fairest of us all. If you are anywhere close, I hope you're in my life. If you're not, there's still time. So my point here is, everybody, I hope you got it, that it's up to us how rich and fulfilling our lives are, not anybody else, just us. Our relationships are about what we put into it, so we get something out of it. If we don't put anything into it, it doesn't go anywhere. It's not ever somebody else's fault. It's yours. And if it is somebody else's fault, it's under very, very rare circumstances. Yes, people do mean things to each other all the time, but often they're the result of something else. I'm going to bring Shelley in. I hope she got to hear that whole paper that I wrote last night. Shell, good morning.
Good morning, Rainey. How are you?
I'm good, dear. How are you?
Doing pretty good. But I did lose the show four times in the last 5 minutes. I don't know. My phone's not even holding on to the call for more than a minute and a half each time now. I don't know what's going on. So hopefully now that we're actually talking, maybe it'll give me that old 15 minutes it used to before it hangs up on us.
Well, but, you don't go off my dashboard. You've been on my dashboard since you joined me at about a minute past the hour.
No, but it's actually dropped the call four times. I've been calling in, which is, that's kind of weird why it's not showing that there's a disconnect. So we'll see how it goes. But I heard most of it. I see where you're going. I'll have to go on Facebook later and read the whole thing because I love the way you write and I love how your mind works. So I want to see how the whole thing unfolded. But I pretty much got the point you were making, and I'm a big believer in that anyway. There's always people that have more than you and appear to be more successful and happy. There's always people that have less than you. And appear to be struggling and discontented and unhappy with their lives. Even if you've had something really bad happen to you or what you perceive to be bad, there's always people worse off, there's always people better off. And even when I was a kid, I used to feel this way. It was just my mindset. I've been this way since I was little. I always felt that whatever was handed to me was mine, and I was going to do the best with it I could. Whether it made me successful or not or whatever, that was really on me and my attitude towards it.
Well, I like something that you just said, and it has very deep meaning. Whatever was handed to me was mine. And, you couldn't have made a truer statement. The problem with most of us is we don't recognize what is ours.
Right.
We don't recognize the gift of being given something that's ours, unless we're talking about, you know, a new car or a new bracelet or a new pair of shoes. We're talking about something that's much more, much deeper, much more meaningful, won't rust, won't tear, and won't get so old you have to throw it in the garbage. We're talking
mm-hmm.
about, you know, things that are given to us in relationships. You know, I counseled somebody this week, and these people are having marital problems. And I listened for well over an hour. When the conversation was over, I said, "So, it appears as though you're perfect and your spouse is a major screw-up." And they looked at me, you know, like, "Well, God, finally somebody gets it," you know. And I laughed and I said, "Honey, you're not perfect. You participated in this whole mess. You are not on the outside looking in. You are a big part. You are the other half of this disaster."
Mm-hmm.
And they didn't get it. Everything came back to the other person being the one to blame, being the one whose fault it was that they didn't have this and they didn't have that, but they did have that and they did have this. And I was like, "Wow." I said, most people do go to that place, most of us. I even said to them, I said, "You know, it's funny because I can make myself feel like I have to go hug Big Spike or make myself feel like I have to go hit him over the head with a 2x4 by conjuring up memories and what they meant to me at the time and what they mean to me now. And it all has to do with how honest I am with myself. I
mm-hmm.
can make bad thing that ever happened to us in 47 years seemed like it was his fault. I can.
Mm-hmm.
But I know better."
Right.
But even if I counsel a young person, very rarely does somebody in the throes of any kind of relationship trauma ever understand the other person's point of view. And
right.
for me, that's pretty scary because, you know, putting on somebody else's shoes is a big part of understanding our relationships. Through this week, though, Shell, I've decided today is going to be mostly about marriages and people.
Mm-hmm.
Tomorrow on the show, I want to talk about the relationship we all have with money and material things.
Okay.
And on Wednesday, I want to talk about parents and siblings.
Good.
And then we'll see where that takes us from there.
Mm-hmm.
And then Friday we'll do a recap. So Thursday, I'm not sure. I'm going to see where it leads us with those three things, and then Thursday we'll discuss what we think we haven't been able to touch on. But the more I watch and listen and have people confide in me, which I've done most of my life, I realize that we have great difficulty in taking ownership of the things that go on in our lives. And
right.
I've always
right.
done that. We've talked about this in other scenarios on the show many, many times about pointing your finger at somebody else and 3-point back at you and dealing with the man in the mirror because that's the only person you can fix or change or do anything with. But it still doesn't stop the blah, blah, blah about how terrible somebody else is to you, and that's why you can't get out of your own way.
Right, right. Well, you know, I went through that with my ex-husband. Now, we had seen a marriage counselor because we had a very tumultuous marriage. Charlie was never physically violent with me, but he was very verbally abusive. He was lazy at times, although he had a brilliant mind and he was a hard worker when he worked, but he would just fall out of these patterns. So, and I always held a full-time job, and I wasn't abusive to him. So I always felt justified in being the victim. And when we went to the marriage counselor even said to us, he said, you know, he said, I have to tell you something. He said, usually when people come to see me, it's 50-50. He said, this is really the first marriage where I got to tell you. And he looked right at my husband. He said, this is like 80-20. He said, and he looked at me and he said, you're not doing everything right either. And he says, and which was a wake-up call for me because I felt like I was the complete victim. He said, you're not doing things right either. But he says, I got to be honest with you. He said, you're at least making an attempt to fix things, you know, and to be there for your husband. And he looked at Charlie. He said, you're not doing anything here. He says, I could probably say 90-10 if I wanted to. But the more I've thought about it over the years is that I can look back over my own behavior, and it still doesn't relinquish Charlie from some of the mean things he did. But the bottom line is I can look over my own behavior now and see how I almost inspired that. You know, like the bully, I was never bullied by other people, but it's almost like I put myself in a position of allowing him to project this anger at the house. So I take more responsibility for that situation now. As I said, Charlie and I have become friends 25 years after we got divorced. We renewed our relationship as far as being friends with each other. But it's interesting that, you know, now that I respond to life differently, I used to react to life, now I respond to life, that it's easier for me now because I take responsibility for so much and because I can see my own role. And even when people do things that might be seen as not right, I can see my own role in how I allowed that situation to take place.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, and you know, that's probably more than half the battle. That's why I said, and what I wrote is the fact that a lot of times it just needs to be talked about and realized. You know, we get into these ruts. We get into these sinkholes, if you will, in life. And instead of realizing that we're in a sinkhole, we just keep looking to everybody else who's standing on the top. Well, excuse me, aren't you going to throw me a rope? Or excuse me, aren't you going to pull me out of here? When they may be, first of all, in a sinkhole of their own, and secondly, when maybe they can't. Maybe it just has to be us. Maybe it has to be me that attempts the climb. Now, attempting the climb and getting a hand up is one scenario. Standing at the bottom of a sinkhole screaming for somebody to help you is another. And they both have different meanings. They both have different outcomes. You know, I don't know what it is in the Bible that says the Lord helps those who help themselves, but I feel like that should be a rule for everything we do. For one thing, it's very frustrating to help somebody who's not even attempting to climb out of that sinkhole or not even attempting to help themselves. That's a very, very frustrating feeling. You're like, well, what the hell's the matter with you? Do you not know that, you know, I can't fix this for you? I remember years ago talking to young women about marriage and relationships. And I can remember them saying to me, this is usually in the workplace, because as a waitress, by the time I was in my 30s, most of the girls that worked with me were 10, sometimes 15 years younger than me. And I would be amused by some of the things that were going on in their lives. And they'd say to me, God, how do you stay married to somebody? Is it okay with you if he does this? Is there, you know, and I'd look at them and I'd say to them, you know, first of all, it was a rude awakening for me to find out that no matter who you hook up with, whether it's your spouse or your best friend, still a big part of the responsibility of living is up to you. You know, you have to have your own stuff together. Otherwise, you're not a very valuable relationship to be in. So until you pass judgment on the person that's in the relationship with you, as in your spouse, your significant other, you have to make sure that 50% of the good stuff is coming from you, because I guarantee you 50% of the bad stuff is. So it doesn't make any sense to think that the other person is supposed to supply 100%, 75%. It just doesn't work like that. And if you're not whole to begin with, there's going to be a struggle. Because, you know, one whole can't make two wholes, no matter how you do it. If you want to stay whole, you have to stay whole within yourself. I mean, you know, I don't know what kind of math that is, or how you could work it out if you were really, you know, a lot smarter than me. But the truth of the matter is, once you take away from a whole, it's no longer whole.
Well, you know, Renee, so, the interesting point about that is that I know a couple right now that where the woman in this couple had a lot of insecurity issues, didn't have a very high self-esteem, and over the last couple of years has gone through some pretty dramatic changes in that, gone through some training, and now she's feeling much more, she's starting to realize that she has some worth. She's seeing how people respond to her genuineness and her intelligence and things like that. And she was in an abusive relationship that did, and she didn't recognize she was in an abusive, not physically, but kind of like me and my ex. Her husband was very verbally abusive, very irresponsible, put too much responsibility on her and didn't do anything, and then criticized her that things weren't going well. Meanwhile, you know, well, you got two legs and two arms. You get up and start fixing these things around the house. So they fought all the time. There was always tension, but then they would fall back into it, and it was almost like a manic depressive. One day they were really up with each other, and the next day they were at each other's throats, that type of scenario. Once she started getting some self-esteem and from outside sources, because she saw how other people were responding to her, and she just started feeling better about herself, the dynamic with her and her husband started changing, and it was very subtle. It wasn't like they had a talk and she said, you can't treat me like that anymore. When she started feeling and acting different, it's almost like it automatically and subtly adjusted his behavior. And even though he didn't go through any of this training, he hasn't gone to these places with her, his behavior has changed dramatically over the last 2 years as well. But it was very subtle. It was very gradual. But the better she felt about herself, the better he started treating her. And it was very interesting to watch it unfold.
Well, I think those statements are truer than true, for sure. Because the way you are treated does also come from you. If you demand a certain amount of respect, you usually get it. If you command that people treat you with loyalty and respect, you usually get it. But it's a two-way street. They have to know they're going to get it from you as well. But there is a lot to be said for a woman, more so than a man, I'm sorry to say, who comes into their own. And because life is set up the way it is, as we always do the menial tasks, and the man is the king of the castle, so to speak, it's hard sometimes to get to that point where you are very proud of yourself and very capable and know that you're capable. So again, that's a little bit of self-preservation, a little bit of knowledge about the fact that you are who you think you are, and you really don't need anybody else to tell you that except yourself. And this is one of the things I'm talking about. This is one of the things that are so incredibly important to our mental health and our physical health. If you can't get yourself to the place where you realize who you are, that can be a lifelong struggle for some people. You and I've met people that are you know, like in their 60s and 70s, who have never come into their own, who have settled,
right,
for being the one with less power, settled for being the one with less say, settled for taking second place. It's sad, but true. And let me say this too, because I sound like I'm preaching about, you know, I sound like a women's writer, and I guess I am to some extent, but it should be equal. There shouldn't be hierarchy in either situation. If you're a team, you're a team. It doesn't mean I'm 85% of the team and you're 15% of the team. It doesn't work like that. It should be a 50-50 thing. And there mm-hmm. should be some days when it's less or more on the other side according to the needs of the two people involved in the relationship. There are times when Shelley and I have been friends now for well over 10 years. Mm-hmm. And there are some days when I do all the talking and Shelley listens, and there are some days when Shelley does all the talking and I listen, because we have a pretty good relationship. Our relationship is based on loyalty and trust, and I know if I ask Shelley something, sometimes she may have to soften it a little bit, but she will tell me the truth, and vice versa. So because I know that, we've built a trust. We've built a trust with each other. If I'm really questioning something and I need to get input on it that doesn't just say, oh, yeah, I'm going to do that, because that's what most people do. They think they're supporting you by saying, oh, yeah, well, if that's what you think is right, you should do that. Well, that's not necessarily true, and that's not necessarily what I'm looking for. I'm looking for an honest opinion. And having honest opinions and respect for each other doesn't mean that you agree with everything the other one says. If you listen to the show, you know Shelley and I have discussions about a lot of things.
Right.
We have different opinions about a lot of things. But because of the mutual respect and trust, we listen to the other side of an issue. And sometimes vice versa.
Right. And, you know, but words are very powerful also. And we're careful how we talk to each other, not because we're consciously being careful, but just because we're respectful of each other. But how many times have you seen a husband and a wife, or any close relationship for that matter, where when they think they're being wronged somehow, which is usually never the case, but that's our perception sometimes, and all of a sudden the nasty comments start flowing. And once you go there with somebody, and this is where I fault myself, because I would get so upset with Charlie for how he treated me that I would turn out and I would return his nasty, you know, verbal barrage with kind. So I would be nasty back to him. Then all that does is perpetuate it. It didn't fix the problem. It didn't rise him above. Things started improving with us when I stopped engaging that. But words are very powerful. And if, you know, a lot of marriage counselors, Dr. Phil says this all the time, that's not fair fighting. Because what it is instead of addressing the problem that you had, instead of talking about the issue, now all of a sudden it becomes personal and you're all of a sudden defending your character. And you move away from the problem you were trying to solve between each other. And now you're just trying to save your own character assessment, and nothing ever gets resolved. because now it's like I'm this really beautiful person that's putting up with you, and you're treating me terribly, and the other person feels the same way. And then it just disintegrates from there, and you never resolve anything. And then resentment comes into it, and it's all because of words. If you just chose different words, it would play out differently. You know, I saw a YouTube video this week, and I got to find it because I should have saved it, but I didn't. I got to see if I can find it. And it was called The Power of Words. And even though it wasn't about a relationship between a man or a woman, it still demonstrates the power of words and how we impact people by what we choose to say. And the YouTube video opens up. You see this man, an older man with glasses on, sitting on the ground on a walkway of a busy street on a mat. And he's got a coin jar in front of him and a cardboard sign. And the sign says, I'm blind, please help. And every now and then, somebody that walked by him threw a coin in the jar. And, you know, but it was just, you know, like every now and then they'd throw like one quarter in or a couple of dimes. This woman passes by him, looks at him, and just walks on by, goes up about 10 steps and stops, turns around, stands right in front of him staring at him. And he reaches forward and he touches her shoes, you know, because that's how a blind person would see what somebody's wearing. So he touches her shoes. It doesn't bother her. She's watching him, picks his sign up and writes something on it. She flips it over and rewrites his sign, puts the sign back, and walks away. And now, the next few scenes, you see people are putting dollar bills in there and all kinds of change, and they're throwing change in front of them. The coin's so overfilled now that people are just throwing change on the mat in front of him. And you see a couple hours later, the woman comes back by and stands in front of him. He reaches forward, touches her shoes, realizes it's the same woman, and he goes, what did you do to my sign? She says, I just chose different words. And she got up and she walked away. The camera pans over to the sign, and it said, it's a beautiful day today, and I can't see it. And the point of it was that the one sign made everybody feel bad. People turn away from things that make them feel bad or guilty. I'm blind. It instills in us. You know, people start running through their head, how did you become blind? Were you born that way? Did something happen to you? Did you drink too much? You know, like, how did you get that way? And they turn their eyes away from things that make them uncomfortable. But when you say something like, it's a beautiful day, now you're engaging a completely different part of human reaction. You're tapping into compassion. And because he was so up and saying something on a positive level, he was still asking for help. But he didn't come across begging anymore. He came across saying, look, it's a beautiful day. I can't see it. And it was lighter, and it was more inviting, and people just started throwing the money down. And that's how our words are when we're in relationships. It's so important to choose words that don't degrade the other person. Because when you make somebody feel okay, they'll engage you. When you deal with guilt, the other person goes into self-preservation mode and they're not listening to what you're saying about the issue. So it's really important not to go there. And I made all those mistakes also. That's why looking back on my marriage, I realized I put Charlie in defensive mode a lot because I was always so upset with him. If I had handled things differently, things would have turned out differently. And I'm very sure of that now, 25 years later. It's interesting to watch how powerful words are, and just choosing different words will yield you different results from the exact same conversation.
Well, and I think that that is an amazing and important message. And I agree with everything you've just said. I think that if you make somebody feel like for some reason they're guilty for your situation, they ignore it. You're right. They walk away from it. They turn away from it. If you make them feel as though, you know, this is the way it is for me, you know, I'd appreciate your help in some way, not, you know, you can see and I can't, so you should give me a couple bucks, is a whole different scenario. And we've talked about this a lot through the years when, as a management employee in most of the positions I've held over the last 20-some years, I've had to let people go. And I always tell people that I'm proud of the fact that only on rare occasions has somebody left my office feeling like they're nothing. Because you know, there is a way to tell people things that are uncomfortable to say to them without, you know, turning the knife in their back. And I'm a big believer in that. I want to, as always, I share little things that happened between AJ and I. And AJ lied to me about something a couple nights ago, something silly. But we had a big conversation, and I said, you know, Grandma does not like lies. The world is full of lies. People who don't even realize they're lying lie. And the lies always hurt other people. But please don't lie to Grandma, because I am on your front line of making sure that you stay safe. If you tell me lies, I make bad decisions on lies that you've said to me. Do you understand that? And he goes, I'm not sure. And I said, okay. I said, if you tell me something that isn't true about somebody else, and I get, say you come out here and tell me that Josh and Austin are being so mean to you, and I find out if I go in and talk to them that you're in there being a brat, and they've asked you to leave them alone because you're not behaving while they're doing something else. That's not a true statement. They were not being bad to you. You were being bad to them. He goes, oh, okay, I get it. So we talked. He gets his shower, gets ready to go to bed. He's sitting on my lap, and he said to me, you know why everybody likes you, Grandma? I said, why? Because I cook good, you know, we just laughed about that. And he goes, no. He said, because you're kind. And I said, I am.
Aww.
And he goes, yeah. He said, I said, but you got in trouble tonight. You still think I'm kind? He goes, yeah, even when you're mad at me, you're kind. I looked at him, you know, I know that that's who I think I try to be. But it was so great to hear a 7-year-old say that to me that I looked at him and I said, well, I hope you always feel that way about me, because as you get older, things get more serious and issues get bigger. And he says, no, he says, I think everybody thinks you're kind, Graham. That's why they all like you. So if a 7-year-old gets that, we should all get that. We should all understand how important that is in any relationship. If you, Shelley, if you had it, well, you did kind of have a chance to meet up with one of your relationships. And when you found each other again, and all of the emotional stuff was out of the way, you were no longer in love with each other, but you liked each other again. Is that a true assessment?
Yes, yes. Yeah, I think Charlie still had stronger feelings left for me than I mean, I love him, but I'm not in love with him anymore. He, evidently, what he had told me is that he never fell out of love with me for all those years, and I don't know if he still is because we didn't talk about it, but for decades after we got divorced, he was still in love with me. But we care about each other. I could call him up at any time now, and I know we haven't spoken in the last few months, but after we rekindled our friendship or relationship, whatever you want to call it, we were talking 2 and 3 times a day for months and months. We got together a couple times at dinner, but he lives so far away from me. He lives like 4 hours away, so you know, if he had lived closer, it's curious as to whether or not we would have continued seeing each other some more. But, yeah, romantically, it wasn't there anymore, which surprised me because I really was head over heels in love with him when we were married. But I feel very lucky that that happened because it's changed my – it was very healing, first of all, to go through something like that, you know, to have somebody who at one time was so mean to me and blamed the whole divorce on me, and then I carried that with me for decades. And then he comes back into my life and says, you know what, I take responsibility for what happened. I didn't treat you well near the end. But I'm also to the point now where I'm taking more responsibility for it. So it kind of let him off the hook a little bit, too, because we both had good lives, you know. And to find out that he cared about me all that time was very, you know, and that he wasn't angry with me anymore, was very, very healing. I mean, most people that go through divorces like I did, because it was a bad divorce, don't get that kind of closure. And it was remarkable for me to readdress the whole relationship decades later and find out that we were both in such better places. It was good for him and it was good for me.
Mm-hmm. But don't you think that, that's a part of what the issues are. When you make a commitment to somebody, and that commitment is supposed to support you, make your life better, make you happier, make the other person happier, the pressure can be tremendous. And that's one of the reasons why I talk about finding some of your own personal strength and fulfillment from within instead of from another person.
Mm-hmm.
Because
the
pressure to make sure your significant other is always happy is really difficult. Really, I mean, you know, that's like, you do that with your children. And it's one of the hardest things that you do. You struggle to make sure that they have everything everybody else has, that they always fit in, and that they're always happy. And you really can't. So something that should be beautiful, like a healthy relationship between you and your significant other or between you and your child, becomes too stressed because you can't deliver. You can't make other people like somebody else just because you do. You can't make other people see that shining star that you see in the person that you love. It's not about that. So one of the things that you can do to make a relationship better is to support that other person's personal self-esteem. Help them build that without creating a monster, because I've seen that happen too, but you have to help them build their personal self-esteem, their own core, so that you're not filling up the glass the rest of the way, that they have the full glass to begin with.
Mm-hmm.
And that alleviates a lot of the pressure on each of you. Because if you know, you're in a volleyball team, volleyball team is really a team sport, right? I mean, you know, each play is done by the whole team. It's not like a quarterback who's got to run all the way down. And, yes, it's a team sport, and, yes, people are supposed to protect him. Or basketball, when everybody's supposed to guard the guy that's dribbling. It just seems like such a funny thing to say to me. Anyway, you know, it's team, but it's not quite the same. So volleyball, in order to get the ball back over the net, more often than not, three people hit the ball. Real team effort. If the rest of the team is useless, you lose the game. And it's the same in a relationship. If the other half of your relationship isn't participating, isn't putting anything into it, it's a losing battle. So you have to be structured within yourself. If in a volleyball game you are incredibly good and you can jump all over the field and take care of all the balls and everything, you're pretty strong. What's going to happen to you is somebody else is going to choose you for their team. You see the significance, though, in making sure that that you and your significant other are equals. That is incredibly important for a healthy relationship. And that means friends, that means everybody, except, you know, a small child. A small child is there for you to nurture and care for. But when they become an adult, then it's important that you're equal to men as well.
And when you say you're equal, it doesn't mean that you're equal in abilities or intelligence or anything like that. What it means is that you have equal participation. You may have a little bit more knowledge in one area. You may have talents the other person does. But then the other person is going to have talents and knowledge you don't have. And if you really look at the strengths and weaknesses in each, you kind of complement each other. There's enough commonality there to attract you to each other, whether it would be a romantic relationship or a friendship. You know, there always has to be some common ground there, you know, for the basis of the relationship, you know. But you're going to find that you each have something different to bring to the table. You have something different to bring to the game, you know. And if you come into the game with your own set of, with abilities, recognize your own abilities, and now you're just trying to complement it. That's why, choosing, like, a volleyball game, you have different positions, you know. And at different times during the game, you're in the back, you've got to hit a little bit stronger, you're in the front, you're gonna you know, slam it over the net or whatever, but you're using different techniques. You know, if you're in the back, you're not going to spike it down, you're just going to be hitting the ground. So you have to use different techniques at different times during the game, you know, and it's the same way in any relationships. But the bottom line is, the more you respect yourself, the easier it is to respect others, and the easier it is to get respect from others. But when you don't have the foundation of respect for yourself, when you're insecure, when you don't understand your own self-worth, and everybody is remarkable. Everybody has something to offer. I don't care if you're a high school dropout. I don't care if you don't feel that you understand technical things. Everybody has talents. Everybody has something that they're good at, that they can share earnestly with the world and make it a better place, you know, whether it's, whether they're creative, whether they're artistic, whether they have musical abilities, whether they know how to plant a garden, write something. I mean, everybody has something to contribute. And when you feel good about yourself, then it's easy to make other people feel good about themselves. And if you feel good about yourself, people just like being around you, point blank. But then it makes people tap into their own self-respect, and they treat you better for that reason.
Well, and you know, that is a very, very true statement. Often, and not all the time. I mean, there's always, there's always goofy things that happen in this life. We both know that. But you're right. If you have a certain air about yourself, that you're secure and you have pretty decent self-esteem and you are okay with yourself, other people feel that, see it, actually treat you the same. So you are actually a reflection of what you want to be when you become that person. You show other people who you are by the way you treat them and the way you act around them, and most people respond to that. I don't think it's hard to understand that when you meet somebody, mind you, there's lots of wolves in sheep's clothing. I think you and I are both old enough to know that. And sometimes somebody pretends to be something they're not. But at the end of the day, truth, it is what it is. One of my kids said that to me the other day. You know, that's the trouble with telling a lie. You never remember what you said because it wasn't true. I said, amen, amen. You know,
that's right.
And I laughed at it and I said, God, I wish more grown-ups knew that or understood that. That telling an untruth doesn't stay with you because there's no circumstance that support the memory.
That's right. Exactly. Exactly. You know, it's funny because Judge Judy says that all the time. I get a kick out of her. She'll ask people questions, and she'll say, now be careful with your answer, You know, she said, when you're telling the truth, she said, you don't need to have a good memory because it's just there. You know, she said, when you make up stories to...
Oh, there goes Shell again. We're a little bit different time schedule today on how often I leave her because we're not on a quarter of the hour, but apparently we lost her again. But it's true. You know, there is no memory of something that's not true. So when somebody asks you to repeat something that you said that wasn't true, you very often can't even go there because you don't remember it. So in a relationship, one of the most important things in my book is honesty. However, I want to spend a couple minutes saying something about that because I have counseled people in the past in regard to coming clean. Let's call it that. You're in a relationship, and at some time in your history, or maybe even before the relationship started, you've done something that you're not really proud of. And I've had a lot of people come to me and say, well, I'm just going to go tell her. I'm going to tell her what I did. We need to start on a clean slate. And that's what I'm going to do. And I say, why do you think something that doesn't have anything to do with her, that she doesn't know about now, will you putting it out there will keep the slate clean? Well, because, you know, they say you should always start everything with complete honesty. Your relationship, I mean, all these sayings, your relationship shouldn't be based on a lie. And da, da, da. Well, the truth of the matter is, until you had a relationship, any of those things that happened before are your private business. And to be honest with you, if you put it on that clean slate when you start a new relationship, the slate's no longer clean. Now it has garbage on it. Now it has crap on it, stuff that you will never be able to erase. So I believe in, as an advocate of honesty, I do believe in honesty. I do believe in being somebody who, whenever possible, tells the truth and doesn't set their world up in a house of cards, which is what lies are. So, dredging something up from your past or her past doesn't serve anybody. Doesn't serve anybody. It doesn't need to be shared because it will never, ever be forgotten. And if you can't live with it, then you need to go confess to somebody who's not trying to have a relationship with you. But to share something, an infidelity, something that you know will hurt your significant other, keep it to yourself. And, I'm sure there would be somebody out there who would say to me, no, Renee, you shouldn't do that. That's not, but I'm sorry. I've seen too many relationships hurt, ended, disastrously because of old stuff that didn't, you know, like you're mad because he did this to so-and-so or with so-and-so way back before he ever met you. How is that any of your business?
Right, right.
I mean, you know, it's another one of those things that, you know, being honest with somebody and straightforward is about the things that pertain to the two of you. Not something that happened 10 years ago. And if you're in your 30s or 40s and you're starting a new relationship for whatever reasons, you have a life. You have history. You have stuff. You should choose very wisely what you decide to share with somebody that you want to love and trust you from now on. And I would be careful about what kind of stuff I tell somebody else because you could give somebody else something to worry about that isn't necessary. Does that make sense to you, Shelley?
Well, it does, but because of who I am and because I would want to know, I would want to share everything about the person that I was with. I wouldn't react that way regardless of what they told me, as long as it didn't happen once we became a couple. I mean, if their infidelity was against me, then that might damage my trust going forward with them. But if they shared an infidelity or if they shared something that they were ashamed of that was prior to us becoming a relationship, I would choose to have faith that the reason they were sharing that with me is because they grew through it and became a better person. So, and I'm not the only one that thinks this way, although it's probably more rare because most people do give in to jealousy and things like that, and I just don't. So I tend to have a different reaction to things anyway because I choose to. I choose to have faith in people, in other words. But, yeah, I can see very much how people dwell on things, number one, that have nothing to do with them. But I think it's healthy to be able to kind of talk about things that bother you because you release the energy from them. If the other person has too much guilt over a bad decision they made, and they don't share it with someone, and like you're saying, maybe they should choose somebody else to talk to get it off their chest with. That might not be a bad idea. But it is important to, if it has nothing to do with you and somebody is sharing something with you, don't make it all of a sudden have something to do with you. That's number one, if I'm on the receiving end of the news. And if you're not sure if the person you're with can take that attitude, then I agree with you that maybe they should get this thing that's bothering them off their chest with some neutral party, somebody that's not going to be affected by it. Because if they don't release it, it will affect the relationship. Even if they don't divulge it to their significant other, if they're carrying around some guilt, guilt is very destructive. And it will affect your behavior going forward. And even if you don't verbally tell your significant other this secret about yourself, it's going to affect how you treat them, and they'll pick up that something's not quite right because we're energetic beings. So I think if my advice would be that if somebody has that type of something from their past that they're not proud of, something that they're ashamed of, they need to share it with somebody and release it. You know, we all make mistakes. We all make big mistakes. And the fact that you are now bothered by that is a testimony to the fact that your character is improving. And by getting rid of the guilt and being proud of yourself for never making that type of mistake again should put you in a better light about how you feel about yourself.
Well, and in the perfect world, that's probably a very true assessment. But imagine you're married to somebody and 4 years ago when you got married, they shared something that they did to their first significant other, whether they were married or not. Maybe it was just a relationship. Maybe it was even in school. Who knows how far back it went. But they shared it with you because they thought that they needed to clean the slate. And now that's in the back of your mind, and it's been a long time ago since they said it to you. But one night, they don't come home, and you can't reach them on the cell phone. And things have been a little strained between you. Money's an issue. You've got little things going on in the house. What do you suppose is the first thing that pops into your head, Shel?
Well, yeah, that they're cheating on you again, or cheating again.
So, and chances are they're not. But that's my point. You get there and all of a sudden, it's it's like right there again, and it scares you. So, interesting how we all feel differently about those kind of things, though. And I do think that there's a lot of discussions that we could have about this, and differences of opinions for sure. And again, I support honesty and truth, and it's a part of your own personal integrity that you don't fabricate things and tell unneeded stories to people that aren't true. However, there are some things that are private that you should carry the burden of, not someone else. So we're out of time, but tomorrow I want to touch on relationships with money and material things. Should be interesting, and I think a lot of us have great relationships with those things, and some of us don't have good relationships with things like money and material things. So everybody, go out there and give today your best shot. I hope you have a happy Monday, and we'll Thank you, Ms. Shelley. We'll talk soon.
Wonderful. All right. All right. Have a wonderful day, Rini. Everyone, have a great day.
Bye-bye, everybody. God bless.
Bye-bye.